Hello and welcome to In the Booth on your official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650. I'm Brendan Batchelor, as always, joined by Randy Janda, coming to you in the wake of a really disappointing shootout loss for the Canucks, 7-6 at the hands of the Columbus Blue Jackets on Friday night. We're going to talk about that and the playoff picture and a lot more here on the show this week. But Randy, before we get to that, we have to remind the listeners that In the Booth is brought to you by Bells and Whistles.
Catch all the action, hockey, football, soccer, and more with Happy Hour Pints for $6.75, 3296 Fraser Street, just off of Kingsway, right in the Fraser Hood. I was there this week, and it's always nice to pop in for a beverage. Say hello if you see me. I'm always looking for friends, Batch.
Yeah, and we talked about the fact we're going to have to record an episode of In the Booth from a booth at Bells and Whistles here. So sometime in the next few weeks here, we'll make our way to Bells and Whistles to record an episode of the show. The big question is, though, how much time is going to be left in the Canucks season? They're right in the thick of a playoff race that has not been going their way of late, and they were not helped out by the fact that they were up 3-0 after one, up 5-3 in the third period in Columbus on Friday, and ultimately had to settle for a single point falling in the shootout in a wild game in the third period. You described it as drunken. It definitely felt that way. And it was a costly point missed for the Canucks at a time of the year where their margin for error is incredibly slim.
Yeah, that was a disappointing result because you're up 3-0 in that game after 20 minutes. Then you're up 5-3 after Columbus gets back into the game. But still, with 20 minutes to play, less than 20 minutes, you have a 2-goal lead. And then somehow you're chasing the game at 6-5 in the final couple of minutes of the game, Batch. So, you know, this is an example yet again for the Vancouver Canucks where they weren't able to manage the game for the eighth time this year. They had a 3-goal lead and they coughed it up to eventually lose the game. And that's something that over time, of course, those points pile up. Even if you pick up a single point in all those games, you're still dropping points, and that one hurts. So you can be happy with the battle level of the Vancouver Canucks in these games, but points drop are points dropped.
Yeah, and we were talking about this before we started recording. Looking at the outlook now with 9 games remaining in the regular season, and we sort of want to work from a standpoint of assuming that it's going to take around 95 points for a team to make the playoffs. It may end up being 94 or 93, but in order to really have a serious chance at grabbing that last wild card spot, you're going to need 95 points. Right now, the Canucks sit with 81 points, so 14 points back of that mark, which, you know, plain and simple, means 7 wins in your last 9 games. Obviously, you could go 6-1-2. There's a variety of scenarios that you could work with, but pretty much you got to win 6 or 7 of your last 9. And, you know, regardless of what the Blues do on the out-of-town scoreboard or the Flames or anybody else, that's really what you have to focus on if you're the Canucks and work from that assumption and go from there. But, you know, anything less than that probably isn't going to be enough unless all of the teams around you go in the tank at the same time, and that's not reasonable to expect.
Yeah, and with the Canucks right now, you have to take care of your own business because the fact of the matter is you can't control if the St. Louis Blues are going on all-time heater. Like, simply, that's out of your control. You can't control if the Calgary Flames all of a sudden continue to be comeback kings and they pick up points. You can control what you do on the ice. And for Vancouver, you know, in that game against the Columbus Blue Jackets, there was a lot of self-inflicted errors that were caused. But, Batch, you're right. That bar is 95 points usually. But we don't know if that's going to be the case. If St. Louis keeps on winning, that bar is a lot higher all of a sudden. But for Vancouver, you have to control what you can control, which is the next game against the Winnipeg Jets. You beat Winnipeg once, you're going to have to do it again here. And it's not easy to win 7 of 9 games against a quality competition. How good, you know, are these teams? We're talking about the third toughest schedule the rest of the way here for Vancouver when you look at strength of schedule. But this is the predicament that they're in. They're going to have to play their best hockey for the final 9 games of the season if they want to make the playoffs. And that's going to be the challenge. You know, there's been a lot of weird stuff going on with the Vancouver Canucks this year, whether it's on ice or off the ice. Fact of the matter is they're going to have to rally together and try their absolute best in the final 9 games.
Yeah, 9 games left. And if we look at the Canucks schedule, five games where you're basically guaranteed to be the betting underdog. You've got Winnipeg on the road on Sunday. That'll be a noon face-off, pregame at 11 right here on Sportsnet 650, your official home of the Canucks. Then you've got Vegas at home April 6th on the second half of a back-to-back. So you're probably the betting underdog in that one. Then you go on the road to Dallas and Colorado that week. And then your last game of the regular season is also at home to Vegas. The other four games, Seattle, you'd probably be favored to beat them. Anaheim, you'd expect to be favored to beat them based on where things sit in the standings. Same goes with San Jose. And then the matchup with the Minnesota Wild, potentially a pick 'em. And, you know, there was some talk this week about, you know, maybe the Wild are the team the Canucks need to rein in. I don't know how realistic that is at this point. You know, it would be tremendous if that game on April 12th is a four-point game that actually means a whole lot, and it would mean the Canucks have won a lot of games between now and then to keep their playoff hopes alive. But, you know, again, if we go back to, you probably need to win 7 of 9. If 5 of your last 9 games are against teams that you wouldn't be favored to beat, that means you have to at least go 3-2 in those 5 games. And if you do that, then you have no margin for error in the other 4 games where you might be favored or at least at even odds.
The one thing that works in the favor of the Canucks right now, at least schedule-wise, because it is a tough schedule, but here's the thing. 6 of their final 8 games are at home. And can you take advantage of that, right? We know they haven't been the best home team this season, but if you're going to pick a time to use that home ice advantage, now is the time in the final 6 games of the season after the Winnipeg game, with 8 games left, they've got 6 that are at Rogers Arena ice. The other thing is, you mentioned the Minnesota Wild, and yes, a long shot to catch them and the Edmonton Oilers. But both of these teams, the way that they're dealing with injuries right now, you have to take care of your job. Who knows what can happen with those teams, because they're kind of wobbling themselves. Is it possible for them to lose 4 or 5 games on, you know, in a row and make this all of a sudden a relevant conversation? You can't bank on it. But the way that both of those teams have been very inconsistent, Edmonton getting smacked around by the Seattle Kraken, they've got a big matchup on the weekend with the Calgary Flames, excuse me. And that's why I start to think, you know, is it possible? Probably not. It's unlikely. But as the Vancouver Canucks, you have to take care of your business. And whether it's St. Louis, whether it's Minnesota, whether it's Edmonton, you have to, you know, you let them play their game. And if that April 12th game is meaningful batch for both teams and all of a sudden there's a race, that's great. But Vancouver has a lot of work to do until then.
Yeah, I mean, even if we were to assume in a best case scenario that the Edmonton Oilers lose every game the rest of the season, 10 games remaining, they lose all of them. Even if that happens, as the Canucks, you still have to win 4 of your last 9 to make that happen, right? So, again, you're right. You can't control what teams are going to do on the out-of-town scoreboard. You can only control what you do. And if the Canucks do manage to get 14 points in their final 9 games and it's not enough, then you could say, hey, great effort. You pushed it all the way to the end. But ultimately, it was some of the things that happened earlier in the season that cost you a playoff spot. And, you know, if you're the Canucks, you can head into the offseason at least feeling good about the late push you had. But ultimately, you don't go 7-2, you don't go, you know, 6-1-2, then the rest of this conversation doesn't matter. And that's why the game against the Jets on Sunday, the first of the final 9 games, becomes such a massive game for this team, because every time you lose a game, every time you drop a point, your margin for error gets that much more slim. And that also applies to every time a result goes against you on the out-of-town scoreboard too.
Yeah, one thing that I think, if the Canucks can keep this conversation going for the playoffs and they can start winning some games here, you start to get into the conversation of, all right, if there's 4 or 5 games left in the season, some of those good teams that you're playing, are they potentially going to start resting guys, right?
Yeah.
But in order,
that last game against Vegas, they could be locked into whatever they're doing and all of their top guys could be sitting.
100%. And even, you know, you start looking at maybe that Colorado game where you're saying on April 10th, if they're locked into the 3 spot and they know they're going to play Dallas, is that something that they're essentially saying, hey, maybe we're not going to dress everybody? But you're right about the Vegas one for sure. That's one where everybody in April 16th is going to be saying, hey, why would we take a risk in a meaningless game? Meaningless for the Vegas Golden Knights. But, you know, up until that point, you have to stay relevant. You have to go on a heater similar to what the Blues are doing right now. Like, Vancouver essentially has to have that 8-1-1, record over the last 10 or very close to that if they want to keep this conversation going. So before we get to resting players, it's going to be, what's going to lead this team to hit that sort of record batch? You're going to need, I think, elite goaltending. That is something that's going to drive this team. Even though they've been able to get goal scoring, they've been able to put up 6 goals against the Columbus Blue Jackets, you put up 5 against the New York Islanders, that's not going to happen every single game. But you're going to need solid goaltending. Thatcher Demko provided against the Islanders. Against Columbus, Lankinen was not able to do that consistently. And it wasn't only on him, but he wasn't able to give them some big saves. But the rest of the way here, when you're playing some heavyweight teams, Batch, you're going to need probably close to bubble Demko at that level of play because this team doesn't have that firepower offensively.
Well, and that brings up an interesting talking point and an interesting question. Because of the lack of margin for error, because of how well Demko has played in his 2 games back, and because of the fact that the Canucks only have 1 back-to-back the rest of the season, is there a chance, and ultimately they have to keep winning games to make this a possibility. If you lose the next few and you're out of the playoff race, then it doesn't matter what you do in the last couple weeks of the season. But let's assume they keep winning, they keep battling, they keep themselves in the race. Is there a chance we see Thatcher Demko play 8 of the last 9 games here if they need him to? I mean, he's the more rested goaltender. He hasn't played a ton this season. He's looked good in the last little bit. And a sub question to that is, would that be a mistake to ride him that heavily as a goaltender that's faced lots of injuries this season?
It comes down to his form. And since he's been back from injury, he's been really, really good. Can he keep that up? Is that something, if they're able to win these games against Winnipeg, against Seattle, Anaheim, you'd probably give that start to Kevin Lankinen, even if Thatcher Demko is playing really well, because the following night, guess what? You're playing the Vegas Golden Knights. You probably want your number one goaltender in that one. So 8 of 9. But I even look, if this is a conversation, we're having this conversation in the final 2 games of the season. Yeah, there's a very good chance that I would say Kevin Lankinen probably plays maybe 2 games maximum.
Maybe not even 2.
But the Sharks game, depending on what the situation, if it's a relevant conversation and if they are 1 point out of the playoffs, or they're right there, yeah, you're probably going with your number one. So the back-to-back against the Vegas Golden Knights and the Ducks are the games that you're looking at switching. But with Thatcher Demko, it comes down to, A, is he in form? Is he consistently playing to the level that we've seen him in the last game against the Islanders? Can he keep that up? Is there, cracks in his technique that maybe we start to identify if he's playing too much? Is too much too soon, potentially? But if this team continues to win with him in goal and he plays the way he did against the New York Islanders, you got to roll with him right now. He's showing that he can play at that level. You're just going to have to gauge it game by game.
Yeah, and again, this only becomes a talking point if the Canucks win enough to keep themselves in the conversation. But just look at the next week. So they've got Winnipeg on Sunday, then 2 days off between games before a Wednesday home date with the Seattle Kraken, then 2 days off between games before that back-to-back you mentioned. And if they're still in the conversation, I almost wonder if they consider running Demko back-to-back, because it's not a traditional back-to-back. It's a matinee game on the Saturday against Anaheim, followed up by a 7 o'clock Sunday night start. So if you say, okay, we'll play the Ducks on Saturday afternoon, let's say you really need a win going into that game, you start Demko in that game, you hope he has a light afternoon, that you can carry the play against Anaheim, that he doesn't face a ton of shots, doesn't have a lot of work, or you build a lead, maybe you pull him early even though you're leading to get Lankinen in there so you can rest him to go the next night. Like, I can't sit here and say that that's out of the realm of possibility, because we just saw them do it with Lankinen when they didn't trust Shelovs to go in. Now, again, things have to go your way. You have to still be in the conversation. Then after that weekend back-to-back where Lankinen probably plays 1 of the 2, but you never know, then you're playing every other day till the rest of the season. So it's a week from Sunday against Vegas, the Tuesday in Dallas, the Thursday in Colorado, the Saturday back home against Minnesota, the Monday back home against San Jose, and then you finish the season on Wednesday, April 16th against Vegas. I see a real possibility, as long as the Canucks keep up their end of the bargain and keep winning, that Demko could play 8 games. Maybe even 9. You never know.
You know what? Okay, in regards to pulling the goaltender and all that, like, Rick Tocchet is very conservative when it comes to pulling goaltenders. And he doesn't like giving a goaltender like 20. Even in, the preseason, he didn't really want to play a goaltender for 2 periods and pull him. I'll believe it when I see it. Yeah. I think in theory, you're right. You could do that, but I just don't expect them to do that in a back-to-back. Could he play both games? Yes. We've seen him do that with Lankinen, but it's going to come down to Thatcher Demko and if he's playing at that highest level. Now, also, you know, with Kevin Lankinen, we've seen him most recently, the Rangers game and the Columbus game, where he didn't play his best, but there's also, you know, he was dealing with something. Where's his health at? How's he feeling? This is going to be a big part of that, because let's just say...
That's true. Demko could play 9 of 9. Lankinen's not 100%.
I was going to say that if it's something that's bothering or something that's going to linger, they may not have a choice but to play Thatcher Demko, because Artur Shelov's, we know the confidence is not there. We know the only team he's been able to, you know, beat this year is the Chicago Blackhawks. So is that something that you're even confident doing? He might be okay for a backup or mop-up duty, but you're not starting him with any confidence. So Kevin Lankinen's health is very, very central to this discussion as well.
Yeah, and I guess, you know, realistically, you don't have to play Lankinen for a week, more than a week from the end of the Columbus game. The next time you would seriously look at starting him, assuming everything goes well with Demko in the next two games, is that Saturday matinee against the Anaheim Ducks on home ice. So let's say he is battling through something. Well, he's got 8 days right now to rest, to recuperate, to get right, and to get ready for potentially one of the biggest games he's played in his career. But again, this is all down to the Canucks winning games and making these games matter. And if I'm in that dressing room, I'm not sitting there having the conversation we're having right now, saying, oh, you got to win 7 of 9, or you could go, you know, 6-1-2, or whatever it might be. I'm saying, let's win the next game to make sure the game after that matters. And then we'll win the next game to make sure the game after that matters. And you want to play as many games that matter down the stretch here. The only way you make those games late in the season matter is you win the games that are happening now. And that starts on Sunday against Winnipeg, a huge game against a team that has been an absolute wagon this year. You imagine they'll be motivated because the Canucks beat them pretty soundly in their last meeting at Rogers Arena not too long ago. And they're also a team that's ramping up for what they hope to be a Stanley Cup run. So tough test, maybe as tough as they come in the NHL, but one the Canucks need to be ready to meet, because every time they lose or every time they drop a point, the margin gets that much slimmer, and the chances of those late season games mattering gets slimmer as well.
And the Winnipeg Jets will be motivated, because Connor Hellebuyck did not look good in that game against Vancouver. Most recently, against the New Jersey Devils, picked up a shutout in a 4-0 win. He was the first star of the game as well. And that's something that, you know, of course, on home ice, he's a different animal. He's a very motivated player. He has had very good success against Vancouver. So you're going to have to get in his grill. You're going to have to make sure that you take away his eyes. And, Batch, one of the things that, you know, I think when you're winning, you always focus on, hey, pick up the 2 points. The standings will take care of himself. You don't have to look at the standings because you're doing your job. Once you drop a point here or you have a loss, then you start looking at the standings board a little bit more just to say, hey, we didn't do our job. What's our predicament?
We need help now. We got to watch the out-of-town scoreboard. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, your destiny's not in your hands anymore. So, you know, that's why the Columbus game will sting a little bit more for this group, because they felt like they maybe had the 2 points. And now, because you dropped that point, you're looking around a little bit more, and that just adds that much more pressure.
So we'll see how the Canucks handle that pressure and handle their matchup with the Jets on Sunday. We've already talked around a lot of the concerning things with this team, but we do have to be honest and say there was a lot of good that happened from the Canucks in that game against the Blue Jackets on Friday night. And even though they lost, and even though, you know, there were a lot of things to nitpick in that game, and the goaltending wasn't great, and they were up 5-3 and 3-0 and on and all the rest of it, Pugh Suter continues to deliver in his role as the number one center, and Kiefer Sherwood continues to provide a huge secondary scoring role. Atu Ratu has goals in back-to-back games, and all of a sudden, this team that couldn't score is finding goals from every corner of the lineup. And when Elias Pettersson and Nils Höglander went down with injury, I don't know if I would have predicted that the Canucks would rattle off the number of goals that they have, but credit to them and credit to the guys down their lineup that are finding a way to have an offensive impact.
It just feels like the collective group has said, all right, you know what, we're not going to have a game breaker to bail us out, or we don't have that player in our lineup, so everybody's got to pull in that same direction. And you mentioned Pugh Suter, 7 points in the last 3 games. He has led the way. Now, beyond that, You know, Kiefer Sherwood in that Columbus game, 3 assists, 10 hits, all effort all the time. And now we're all starting to see Dakota Joshua have some stats as well. He was doing the right things. He was playing the game the right way, but we didn't necessarily see the production against Columbus. Another 2 assists for him playing on that line with Atu Ratu and Kiefer Sherwood. But Ratu is the player I think long-term is making an impact right now, because as much as this team is about making the playoffs and really trying to get that wild card 2 spot, there's a lot of young players on this team right now that are trying to make an impact, not only for this year, but also with an eye to training camp, with an eye to next season and winning jobs. If you make an impact now in high-pressure situations, you better believe Patrick Alvin and his management group are going to say, you know what, when there was so many injuries, when there's a lot of injuries down the middle specifically, this guy stepped up. And Atu Ratu is certainly inserting his name in that conversation, because he's winning draws, he's scoring clutch goals, and I like his forecheck. I think his skating can get a little faster in the offseason. He can ramp it up even further. But the fact that he's able to play a heavy game, he's able to get home, that is projecting well for a bottom six role for this team in the longer term.
Yeah, I mean, you're not worried about depth at the center ice position. You are worried about top-level talent at the center ice position going into next season. But, you know, Teddy Bluger has been delivering of late, playing very well, a key part of the penalty kill. You mentioned Ratu. I think Niels Omon's played some of the best hockey of his NHL career in recent days. We'll come to talk about Pugh Suter in the mailbag in a few minutes, because we've got some questions in about him, and man, has he been good. And it'll be interesting to see whether he remains a Vancouver Canuck beyond this season. But as we look again to the stretch run here and to what the Canucks need to do, they need to continue to get depth scoring. They need to continue to get offense from the back end, which we've seen as well. Derek Forbert scoring a key goal in the win over the Islanders. A guy like Jonathan Lekkomäki in a depth forward position gets the shootout winner against the Devils, albeit he didn't score in the shootout in Columbus. You know, especially if, let's say, Elias Pettersson and Nils Höglander are done for the regular season, and we don't know that. Ultimately, they left and went home off the trip, so we'll have to wait and see if that means that they're done for the regular season. Could they be back in sometime in the next week? Who knows? We'll get an update from the organization on that probably once they return home from the trip. But if, let's say, those guys aren't in there, you need to continue to get depth scoring throughout the lineup, and guys like Ratu and Forbert and Bluger and whoever you want to add to that list need to continue to find a way to have a big impact.
Yeah, Linus Karlsson would be another player who didn't play all that much. He played sub 9 minutes, but he had a goal. He was attacking the middle of the ice. And one thing I think with Linus Karlsson, he had some trouble with in that Columbus game was the penalty box. He was took 3 penalties in that game, which is something that you don't want as a young player. So that's one situation where I would say, okay, you know, pretty good play, but overall, whether it was that tripping call in the middle of the ice, there was an unsportsmanlike, there was another roughing call on the same play. So that's where it was essentially 2 penalties at the same time. That's one thing you got to watch out for, where you don't want to kill the flow of the game. You don't want to kill your confidence. But overall, I think he's trending in the right direction.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, the kind of player that Rick Tocchet likes. And you look at the goal that he scored. He's in front of the net. He uses his size to get body position, and he redirects a centering pass into the back of the net. Ratu scores a goal pretty much the same way, right at the top of the crease off the delayed call on the trip on Sherwood, where Joshua finds him out front. And something Rick Tocchet has preached with this team all season long is starting to happen with guys that haven't played for this team all season long, where you're getting to the middle of the ice, you're getting to the front of the net, you're going to the hard areas, you're doing what it takes to get goals at this time of the year, and those young guys are getting rewarded for it, and credit to them for being willing to play that inside game, as Rick Tocchet would say.
And that's going to serve their purpose right now, because, of course, you know, this time of the year, that's where you're going to get the goals. And I think the Columbus game was a classic example of that. Look at some of the goals that Boone Jenner scored, right? He had 2 goals in that game, and they weren't pretty, but they got the job done. And a lot of players that feature in the middle six or in the bottom six, you have to make sure that you're getting there. And sometimes it's going to be luck. Sometimes it's going to be you take a beating and you get that deflection or you get that tip in. So I think short term, of course, but long term as well, in order to be a professional NHL player and provide that consistency, you got to be willing to take a beating. And Linus Karlsson, I think, in short spurts has shown that he can be that player to a certain extent. Now you got to do it game in, game out. Atu Ratu is starting to show that as well.
This is In the Booth on Sportsnet 650, your official home of the Canucks. We'll step aside for a moment, and on the other side, we will get into the mailbag and answer your questions. You're listening to the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to In the Booth on your official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650. Brendan Batchelor and Randeep Janda with you. And at this point in the show, I always like to remind you that if you're listening on the radio, you've missed any part of the show, you want to hear the whole thing, then you can get it as a podcast on the Canucks Central podcast feed. You also want to subscribe to that feed. You will get In the Booth every week. You will get Canucks Central every weekday with Sat and Reach. And you get every Canucks postgame show with Sat and Bick as well. And In the Booth here on Sportsnet 650 is brought to you by Bells and Whistles.
Catch all the action, hockey, football, soccer, and more with Happy Hour Pints for $6.75 at 3296 Fraser Street, just off of Kingsway, right in the Fraser Hood.
All right, let's open up the mailbag. We asked for your questions, and you once again delivered. Dave writes in, asks, was it 80s night in Columbus? The scoreline reminded me of far too many games growing up. And yeah, 7-6 in a shootout. It was one of those games where Elvis Merzlikins played the role of Grant Fuhr, where he made just enough saves to help his team across the finish line and stopped all three Canucks shooters in the shootout as well.
Yeah, and it was shots. The equipment certainly wasn't from the 80s. It was big-bodied goaltenders. But it was loose. It was, there was moments where in that first period, Columbus didn't look like a team that was ready to play. And Vancouver took advantage of that. They drew penalties. They were able to score. And then what happened? The second period, it was very much the other way. And Lankinen wasn't able to make some big saves, like Merzlikins wasn't able to make saves. And I want to give credit to the both teams as well, because they were able to create offense and find those weak spots. But there are plenty of weak spots in that game, Batch, for both teams, whether it was goaltending or defensive zone coverage.
Well, and ultimately, that's why both teams are in playoff races and not firmly in the playoff picture. And you can say that about all the teams in the West, too, although St. Louis has been on a heck of a run. Brian writes in, he says, a couple of weeks ago, there was a really nice article published about iconic calls for the Canucks, and I know the article he's referring to. Steve Ewan of The Province wrote a great piece. I urge you to go and find it if you haven't read it. And he interviewed me for this piece, as Brian alludes to. He says, Batch got to say his favorite call, but I'm wondering what Randeep's favorite call is
okay.
in Canucks history. I said that I think the most iconic call in franchise history is the he'll play on crutches. Jim Robson talking about Trevor Linden, the end of game 6 of the 94 Stanley Cup final. My favorite call, though, is Greg Adams, the goal that sent them to the Stanley Cup final, eliminating the Maple Leafs in the conference final that year.
Yeah, we're definitely thinking the same era. So, Brian, thanks for the question. And anytime you get a call from Steve Ewan, you got to pick up. The man's a legend.
100%.
So, in regards to the call itself, that era, that Stanley Cup run for the Vancouver Canucks, I listened to two of those goal calls live. And I missed the Brown to Burry. I was actually at a wedding reception in Golden, British Columbia, where they were doing score updates. Somebody would run onto the stage. This is pre-internet days. So I never actually caught that one live. But the Greg Adams one, sitting in my house as a kid, watching that one, listening to that one, that is an all-timer for me, because it was not only is the team going to the Stanley Cup final? It was against the Toronto Maple Leafs, who were, had Doug Gilmour, had Felix Potvin, had Wendell Clark. They were the juggernaut. They were the animal from the center of the universe.
They had been to the conference finals the year before and lost to the LA Kings.
Absolutely. So it was, you always heard about them. You always heard about Dougie Gilmour, of course, with Coach's Corner. They were, all those guys were favorites on that segment. And it felt like you took down Goliath to a certain extent. Even though the team hadn't won anything, it just felt like, oh, we beat Toronto. And that call by Jim Robson is an unbelievable one. You've talked about it before, how Mr. Robson is not a huge fan of it himself, but it is iconic. I love, in retrospect, of course, the Trevor Linden call is unbelievable, and it speaks to the spirit of that team. But in the moment, my favorite goal call, I have to agree with you, it's the Greg Adams.
Brian also follows up and says, small note, he loved my call from last year saying, listen to this place. So thank you, Brian. We always appreciate your questions and your kind words. Next question from KD on Twitter. With the promise these young defensemen have shown with the big team, how far do you think the Canucks will go to address their defense going forward, or do they just let these younger guys stay up and develop? And I think we were talking about this earlier this week, and we brought it up while we were calling the game against the Blue Jackets, that I've kind of had to reframe my thinking around this offseason, because for so much time this year, we were talking about who are they going to acquire on defense and how are they going to bolster the back end. And you were looking at defensemen on other teams that might be pending unrestricted free agents and saying, okay, will they fit in Vancouver? But then they went out and got Marcus Pettersson, and they brought Elias Pettersson up, and they acquired Victor Mancini. And suddenly you look at this blue line and you go, okay, that looks pretty good. You know, for me, the one question around the back end is, will Derek Forbert come back? I think they probably have a pretty good appetite for him to return. He's been a key penalty killer here late in the year, and you always want to have a veteran guy that can play some of those minutes down your lineup so that you're not solely relying on young defensemen who will still have ups and downs in their development, even if they have shown well of late. But for the most part, I think they're either keeping Derek Forbert or they're going to go find another Derek Forbert type to fill that role. But beyond that, I don't see them making big changes to this blue line. I think the makeover they were looking for on the blue line already happened in season prior to the trade deadline this year.
Yeah, when you start looking at that kind of that dynamic on the left or the right-hand side, you want any player, young player, to provide competition and eventually surpass the veteran. I don't think Elias Pettersson has done that yet. I think next year that's going to be the path for him, where if he gets a training camp and he's a little bit more composed in certain situations, he continues to grow, he continues to get more comfortable. You know, if I'm Derek Forbert, whoever that defenseman is, you're looking over your shoulder because this young kid could take your job really quick. Now, the other thing is they've got a lot of left shot D that are coming up over the next couple of years. Elias Pettersson's one of them. Kudryavtsev is another player that's been impressing at the Abbotsford level. Sawyer Mignot is another player that might be a couple years away. He's currently still in, you know, WHL, but very good reviews. Was on the World Junior team, and that's one maybe a few years away. But still, you've started to build out some depth. So when we talk about building up the defensive position, Canucks have done that. And then you start looking at the right-hand side, Victor Mancini, Tom Villander. Like, these are players, there is a position of depth. If anything, I think you're addressing the forward group by dealing one of these young defensemen away. Now, who that will be, we're not sure. We'll see. But you've all of a sudden really addressed your left-hand side at the pro level, at the NHL level, where you've got Marcus Pettersson as your number three defenseman. You've got Quinn Hughes as your number one. You're probably going to have a mix of Elias Pettersson and some veteran presence to fill out the final pair. And then you got a bunch of young players that can fill out depth in the organization. Are you in a position of, you know, leverage to say, hey, we got some extra, maybe one extra body here. How do you include that player potentially in a deal to address the forward group?
Yeah, and I think that's a really good point and a strong likelihood heading into this offseason. And you bring up Vilander as well. He is certainly going to play a part in this conversation, whether it be late this season, whether it be at training camp next year, whether it be as an AHL call-up throughout the season next season. These are all possibilities for this blue line core. And you're right, it's a position of strength for them now, which means they could deal from that position of strength to help what has become an area of weakness at the center ice position. And speaking of the center ice position, we have a couple of questions in here on the same topic. Justin in East Van writes in first and says, has Pew Suter's recent play made a case for the Canucks to re-sign him? And at Strong Belly on Blue Sky also said, was the real 2C actually the Pew Suter we met along the way? And you know, Pew Suter, credit to him, he has absolutely stepped up and delivered ever since he's been asked to play the number one center role here with Elias Pettersson out of the lineup due to injury. And more you're hearing in the market here people saying, maybe you got to bring this guy back. And you can understand why when you see the way he's been playing, although the way he's been playing is certain to increase the number on the contract the Canucks would potentially sign him to if he were to return to Vancouver.
Yeah, in regards to that question from Justin and East Van, has Pew Suter's recent play made a case for the Canucks to re-sign him? I thought the case was already out there. If anything, he might have priced himself out of signing in Vancouver, because what is that dollar value now, right? Pew Suter is a heck of a player, but what is his ceiling? What is his ideal fit? He's not a 1C. I think we can all agree on that. Like, he's playing at that level right now, but over 82, this is a guy that, you know, hit 20 goals for the first time in his career. He's probably still in that 3C range, or he can be a winger in your top six. What are you willing to pay for that? Is that, you know, $4.5 million over a 5-year deal? We're committing $20 million to a player when they're potentially a second or third line player for you. I still am wary about that, because I think as good as he has been, is he going to be playing? You know, you got Filip Hedl there, you've got Elias Pettersson there, you've got Pew Suter. You still need a high-end center to come into this group. So with Pew Suter, I think there is a path for him to re-sign in Vancouver, but how long is the term? And what is that AAV? Of course, the cap is going up, but if you're Vancouver, you still have to be smart on how you're building out this team. So, you know, if there's a number where you can say, hey, maybe it's 3.75. Maybe there's a long-term deal to be had there where he's able to plug that hole on the wing, maybe in your middle six, and also play center. I like that. But Batch, you know, what is that number ultimately long-term for this team?
Yeah, and, you know, Pew Suter at the moment is 28. He will be 29 by the start of next season. So term is an interesting conversation within the context of this signing. The one thing I will say with Suter is he's already not a burner. And whenever we hear Rick Tocchet speak about him, he talks about his hockey IQ and how he's not the fastest guy, but he gets there with his brain and the way he anticipates the play. So I'm actually okay signing Suter to a little bit longer term than you might actually want, because of the fact that he's a hockey IQ guy that doesn't rely on his speed as it is. And then another name that you brought up there that I think is crucial to this conversation is Filip Hedl, who is out right now with a concussion, has a history of concussion issues. And look at some of the guys that have come through Vancouver who have had their careers derailed and ultimately basically ended by concussions. We can look at Michael Ferland. We can look at Tucker Poolman. Is Filip Hedl the next name on that list? And how much of an insurance policy do you need to have, even if Hedl is good to play next season, that anytime he takes a hard hit into the boards, he could be out for 20 plus games?
Yeah,
that to me is why I'm okay not only giving term to Pew Suter, but I'd give him a higher dollar amount too, because he's an insurance policy that we've seen. If you need him to be elevated up the lineup, then he can play that role. He's certainly capable of doing well in a bottom six role too. He's been a crucial penalty killer for this team, which I think maybe flies under the radar a little bit at times. He leads the team in shorthanded ice time, and that is usually a stat that goes to defensemen, but it's Pew Suter that's been out there more than anyone else on the penalty kill. I think he's invaluable to what they do, and if they are looking to, you know, turn things back in the right direction quickly next season, get back to being a competitive team, and make some other bold moves, I think a move that might be bold to some but would still be the right decision is to make sure you get Pew Suter back in Vancouver colors. Not totally regardless of the term and the money, but I'd be pretty flexible in terms of what I'm willing to give him because of what he's shown this season.
Well, one thing's for sure. This is a guy that had to wait till August to get his deal for the Vancouver Canucks. He won't be doing that this year. He's probably going to be a day one, if maximum day two signing.
He'll be a day one signing if he even gets there. If the Canucks lock him up before,
sure,
it won't even matter. Yeah.
If he hits UFA status, and the only reason he'd be going to July 2 is if he wants to wait and play the market. But the Filip Hedl point is interesting, because I agree with you. I think what we've been able to see from Pew Suter, his neutral zone play, his playmaking, that shorthanded goal that Tyler Myers scored, who starts that at his own blue line? It's Pew Suter. He wins that battle, chips it forward. Sherwood and Myers do the rest. With Filip Hedl, though, this is a player that, of course, has that concussion history. You know, if you all of a sudden are moving that player over and saying, okay, we're not sure if he's going to play consistently, or I'm going to say this as well. If, you know, this management team has been very, very quick to operate. If they see a player as a fit, they'll keep him. If not, They'll try to flip him too. So, like, you know, there's going to be, I think Filip Hedl has done some good things in Vancouver, but the jury's still out if he is the long-term answer at that 2 or 3C position. Now, one thing, if you hold on to Pugh Suter, what you're going to need on that line batch is you're going to need a puck carrier. And Filip Hedl, in his short time with the Vancouver Canucks, has provided a zone entry and exit machine. The Canucks need somebody other than Quinn Hughes to be that. So if Pugh Suter is signed and re-signed in Vancouver, they're going to have to address the wing spot of a puck carrier. And yes, I may be alluding to Nikolaj Ehlers, but, you know, look at the profile that this team has been linked to in the past. They pick up Filip Hedl. Martin Natchez was another player they're linked to, plays very much that style, higher end. Nick Ehlers is very much that style as well. We saw him against the Canucks. They lost that game, Winnipeg did, but who was the most dangerous player on the ice for Winnipeg that night? It was Nick Ehlers. That is the profile I think the team will need to address, whether they end up sticking with a Pugh Suter and maybe Filip Hedl plays or not plays. You still need to address the wings where you have a puck carrier to maybe play alongside a Pugh Suter to say, all right, this guy, he can wheel and deal. He's a puck carrier. Suter's going to do the strong two-way game, but whether it's Elias Pettersson or Pugh Suter, you need a speedy winger that can carry the puck next to both of those guys.
Yeah, absolutely, and that's why Nikolaj Ehlers is a name that keeps getting brought up as a free agent signing for this team because of the speed. And ultimately, it might be why they don't bring Brock Besser back too, which is a different conversation that we can have on another day. But Besser's been playing better of late, contributing. At the same time, he's not exactly a burner either, and I think that's one of the issues this team wants to address is a lack of speed at times. Our next question comes from JoeHall21 on Twitter. Did the Canucks overpay Lankanen in terms of AAV? He should be around Charlie Lindgren's number of $3 to $4 million. And my answer is no, they didn't overpay Lankanen on AAV. And the reason why is the salary cap is going up. And goaltenders are going to potentially earn more money, and goaltenders in Kevin Lankanen's spot will earn more money. I think Lankanen probably could have got more than the money he did if he went to market this summer as a free agent. So whether you want to call it a hometown discount, whether you want to call it him liking the fit in Vancouver, whatever it might be, I think that contract number for Kevin Lankanen, which if I'm not mistaken is $4.5 million
yep.
AAV on the five-year deal. Like, if you're asking me what concerns me more about that contract, the money or the term, it's definitely the term as a guy that's, you know, soon entering his 30s. But in terms of the actual dollar amount with the cap going up, that's going to be the price of doing business for goaltenders of Kevin Lankanen's caliber going forward.
Yeah, the Charlie Lindgren example, I've heard that from a few folks as well, and I understand that as well because compared to the other comparison, Joey DeCord, DeCord's younger, has played about the same amount of games, but he's had better career numbers than Kevin Lankanen. Charlie Lindgren, a little bit older than Kevin Lankanen, and he re-signed for 3 years, $9 million, so three AAV. Here's the thing. It's all about leverage, right? Washington has a player in Thompson that they're really confident with his goaltending. He's their 1A. At the time of signing for the Vancouver Canucks, Kevin Lankanen was their 1A, and the leverage was with Kevin Lankanen and his agent. So if you are looking for a deal at that point, yeah, there's more leverage for Kevin Lankanen. And remember, Thatcher Demko was injured at that point. So I think, you know, if you sign that deal a couple of months earlier and you're in a position where maybe you sign Kevin Lankanen to a two-year deal rather than a one-year deal, yeah, you might have leverage when you signed him. But it has to come down to the goaltender. Are they willing to sign on the line at that point, on the dotted line? And with Kevin Lankanen, him playing the long game here, him waiting it out, was a smart move. He bet on himself, and maybe he got $500,000 per season, a little bit more than market value as of right now. But that's, I think, credit, tip your cap to Kevin Lankanen. He played the game well, right? If he was able to pocket a few more million as a result of that, I think that's the price of doing business. And for Vancouver, Batch, what choice do you really have at that point? You need a solid second option in net. I don't think it's an overpay necessarily, but I will say that I think Kevin Lankanen certainly had more leverage in this contract negotiation than Charlie Lindgren did.
And my stance on this is very similar to what I said about Pugh Suter, which is if the guy delivered, showed he could play an increased role, showed he could be an insurance policy, which is what Pugh Suter would be for a guy like Filip Hedl, which is what Kevin Lankanen is going to be for a guy like Thatcher Demko, I'm okay paying a little bit more or giving a little bit more term to be able to sleep at night knowing that if Thatcher Demko goes down again, I'm not totally and completely in a tough situation in my crease.
Well, the other thing on top of that is, organizationally, they don't have a player that's ready to take that step from the AHL. Archer Shelov's, we've seen what, you know, his game's at right now. Nikita Tolopilo's not that player right now. They've got other guys, Ty Young and others, that are working their way through the system, but none of those players are ready for the NHL level, even at the backup position. So once again, if you're Kevin Lankinen and his agent, you know that. So you're in a position to say, hey, we want to get closer to what he'll make in UFA status.
Well, and it also makes me wonder, as you bring that up, because of the struggles that Archer Shelovs has had this year, both at the NHL level and the AHL level, might this team be in the market for another goaltender this summer to say, okay, we didn't even trust Shelovs to go in the net late in the season. We played Lankinen in a back-to-back. Do we need a third goaltender to be an insurance policy that can come up and be our regular NHL backup if Demko or Lankinen go down? And the other thing I would say is, you know, this question is clearly within the context of Lankinen not having a great game on Friday night and maybe tiring down the stretch here a little bit. But things can change very quickly. Thatcher Demko's been back. He's played two very good games. He could go down with another injury. I'm not saying I expect that to happen, but it's a possibility you have to be ready for. Conversely, Lankinen could find his game again and be very good in the Canucks' next start, or come back next season and take his game to yet another level. So I know right now, in this moment, it feels like, oh, Demko's played so well, and Lankinen was a part of the reason they lost that point on Friday night. Are they paying him too much? But I really caution against looking at short-term results and trying to extrapolate that out to longer-term conclusions, because Kevin Lankinen, for the most part, has been tremendous for this team this season, and they are not even in this playoff race if they did not sign him on the last day of training camp.
Well, on that note, with 9 games left for the Vancouver Canucks to play here, who has been the best player for the Vancouver Canucks? Give me a top 3. First was Quinn Hughes.
Second is Kevin Lankinen, for
absolutely.
Sure.
So when we can't even get past the second best player and, you know, talk about Kevin Lankinen, essentially, right? This is a player that has, you know, elevated his game. He's shown that he can play at the highest level this year. Of course, he's got a heavier workload, so therefore you are, you know, trying to figure out whether he can handle it. And that's a valid question, right? This is the first time he's played this many games, but all things, you know, considered, he is still their second best player this season at this point in time, and I think he's going to end the season that way. So $4.5 million for a team that's fighting for the playoffs, and at the beginning of the year, he was clutch. He was really clutch, and so 4.5, I'm willing to take that. That's not an overpay to me.
No, absolutely not. A couple of questions that we won't have time to get to this week, so thanks for writing in. Sorry we didn't get to them. We might try to fit them in next week, so write in again if you have questions for the show. We always love interacting with you, the listener, but we're fresh out of time on the show this week, Randeep. So Saturday night, you'll be on Hockey Night in Canada, Punjabi, and then you and I will both be back for another massive game. They're all massive games at this time of the year. A noon puck drop against the Winnipeg Jets on Sunday, the pregame show at 11 o'clock.
That's right. On Saturday night, we'll have LA versus Toronto and then the Battle of Alberta. So if you're watching other teams on Saturday night, scoreboard watching, a little bit standings watch, Calgary relevant to the Canucks conversation. And maybe, just maybe, if the Edmonton Oilers keep on losing, they might be relevant in that conversation too.
So who are you cheering for in that game? The Oilers or the Flames?
I think you're cheering for a regulation loss.
Yeah, just don't let it go to overtime, no matter what. Absolutely. Again, thanks for joining us. If you've missed any part of the show, you can catch it on the podcast on the Canucks Central podcast feed. This has been In the Booth on your official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.